I'm Christian, and welcome to the Jemoir Leadership Podcast, a show where we talk about effective collaboration, influence, and leadership in an increasingly complex world. My interview partner is Dr. Dirk Schlimm. Dirk is an international leadership expert and the author of Influencing Powerful People. The purpose of this podcast is to share ideas and stimulate discussion, and it does not constitute professional advice of any kind. If such advice is needed, the services of a competent professional should be sought. The speakers, hosts, and Jemoir International Incorporated are not to be held responsible for any use, misuse, or reuse of the content. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to the Jemoir Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Christian, and as always, I'm joined by Dirk Schlimm, our leadership expert. This is part two of a two-part interview series with Jody Howick, the Associate Dean of the JR School of Business at the Northern Alberta Institute of Technology, also known as NAIT. With a background in health and safety, Jody brings a unique perspective to her role in academic leadership, so I encourage you, this is part two. Join us as we continue to explore topics such as academic leadership, health and safety management, industry partnerships, that's big, and of course, at the end of this part, Jody's advice for aspiring leaders. Let's dive back in.
We have maybe a bridge from there, and I know, Dirk, you're quite passionate about this, so I'm glad we're asking it. We do love to talk about technology on the show, so with a technological focus in both teaching and business, how does NAIT stay ahead in preparing students for the rapidly evolving tech landscape? We could talk about all sorts of different things there, but our favorite on the show, certainly I know it's one of Dirk's favorites. So for example, what is your AI strategy in both teaching itself and business reality going forward?
I also share passion for this. Like, so yeah. I was so excited to have this.
Good.
So I'm going to give you just a little bit of a brief experience of kind of where our school was at last December. So last December, not this past one, but the one before, ChatGPT's coming out hard and fast, and my inbox and our cafe chats were full of our instructors fully panicked about what ChatGPT was going to do to their role, what AI was going to do to our ability to educate, and particularly to hold students, to be able to evaluate students' ability to do things on their own without AI. And so the approach that we took was, let's lean in. So you've got institutions all over the place and everybody's different, but we had some that were completely banning the use of AI in any assessments. And we leaned into, let's learn together on this. So we empowered our team to integrate artificial intelligence wherever they could. And so what that opportunity provides is skill development for students who are living in today's world, who need to be able to understand the value and the risks of using artificial intelligence, the ethics of it, as well as to be able to suss out what's truth and what's fiction.
Right.
So we created assessments that allowed for that opportunity. And my favorite story is honestly one of my closest to retirement instructors was the most concerned about it. And I had a conversation with him where I just encouraged him, give it a try, see what he could do with it in his classroom. And he is now our champion for integrating AI in assessments, in foundational assessments. He provides students the opportunity to explore with it, and then he narrows it into, you know, now critique and compare and contrast and build your ideas from there. So using it as a tool. We've used it in many, many ways. We have instructors who have their students use it as a study guide. study partner, sorry. And so, you know, there's so many opportunities for it. Personally, I'm on the side of machines are great. It's another tool to support us. You know, I need autocorrect because I type fast and I have slightly dyslexic typing, I like to say. So, you know, using these tools for our benefit, I think is an exciting opportunity for us.
Yeah, no, that's a great answer. And I think, of course, lots of people with lots of different opinions on the topic. So I know from my own experience where at the start of my PhD program, I was a teaching assistant for history courses, no AI. As soon as I start teaching myself, happened to be English classes with AI suddenly coming on the scene, that made things difficult in some ways. But I can say in my own experience, and Dirk likes the phrase cognitive offloading, where in my lesson prep and in my administrative stuff, AI is such a powerful tool. And I think as time goes on, even in English courses where you might think, oh, you don't want students writing essays, but surely AI, there's a place in creating outlines or just organizing thoughts. And you think about, we wouldn't want to ban calculators in certain math contexts. We probably wouldn't want to ban an AI resource that could help with citations or bibliographies in an English context. And I'm sure that applies across industries and, of course, academic classrooms, whatever is the field. But Dirk, this is your favorite topic, I think, lately. So we want to hear your two cents as well. What are you thinking there?
Yeah, so this is I've given my two cents on the podcast on this a few times. So I'm trying to put in different two cents right now. And so I'm looking at it maybe pragmatically is the rivalry and the race between the United States and China, which I think is dominating what's happening in the world, is a technology race. And it is a AI race. I mean, so if you look at the excitement over DeepSeek R1, which is called the Sputnik moment, where all of a sudden, you know, China has made another leap forward and has really caused quite a stir in the US and around the world, shows that what's going on. So I do not think we can afford not to use these tools. And then if I look at the approach that the Europeans taking, they are a leader in regulation and bringing out hundreds and hundreds of pages. I mean, there's a lot of regulation fatigue in Europe right now because you cannot absorb the amount of pages that you have to read and understand. And then the Americans taking a light touch approach to regulation. And I think China will do whatever it takes to move it forward. So if you want to stay relevant in the world, you need to use these tools. And of course, you want to use them properly. And you want to use them responsibly, but I think this is what's there now, and your competitors politically, business wise will use those tools, and regulation can hold Europeans back. So I could go on for this forever, but if you look, for example, the European software industry, data industry, yes, you have the GDPR, all the data protection laws, but you also don't have anybody to compete with Silicon Valley, right? And so there needs to be a pragmatic approach. I know it's a difficult question, but that's the world we live in, and that's the realities we're facing. And Christian, I give it back to you. Otherwise, my two cents turn into $20 now.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And I think right now where we are, AI definitely brings that out, and technology, it is a fascinating topic, and there's so much to think about. But Jody, I wanted to go back to a conversation that we were having a bit earlier about the connection between the industry and the academy. So thinking about your role at NAIT and the partnerships with industry, just a question of how that relationship shapes the curriculum and the opportunities that are available to students. But then as you think about that, I'm sure our audience would be keen to know and understand what that means for you as a leader navigating that relationship and thinking both about the industry and, of course, the students.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's balancing what we're able to do with what industry wants. And so, and I can say, as a past chair who developed a program, Really, when I first developed that program, I kind of feel sorry for the students that were in it because I was offering a degree and a diploma. It was 4 years worth of content and 2 years worth of learning experience. Sure. And that's a pretty intense experience for students, right? So as I grew in understanding that, it's really about that balance of, okay, industry, we are in a partnership here. So let's really make sure that we understand what is it that our graduates need to know, not what will they be doing in 5 years or 10 years from now. What are they going to be doing day one, year one? We're getting them ready for that. That's what our commitment is to. And so it's that educating industry, listening to industry, and making sure that you're able to pull out those critical skills and then developing our curriculum, again, in partnership with industry, but in alignment with what are we doing tomorrow, not 10 years from now. That's why they have to come back to us, and that's why they have to go to Dirk for executive leadership.
Right. Oh, no, that is good to think about. Dirk, any thoughts and response?
Yeah, so maybe a kind of different angle. So I believe industry and universities working together is a huge benefit. And if I look at it from a moment from the business perspective, so having student interns, for example, they sometimes do bring the latest thing. They do look at things differently. So I think it's always fun, quite frankly, to have interns in a business setting. And so that interaction is great. And then you can have it at a more advanced level where you say, well, I don't have time to figure all of this out. And you maybe get into a research partnership and those things. So yeah, I think there's a big place for collaboration there. So that would be my good.
Yeah, no, and that's something I'm sure we'll have to think more about as time goes on. Just coming back to polytechnic education, Jody, we were talking about that earlier, so maybe we'll ask a broader question. Where do you think polytechnic education fits into today's global economy, and how does NAIT contribute to this? Maybe building off of that, is there a specific angle from a Northern Alberta perspective that you're bringing to this conversation and perhaps this question now?
Yeah, I mean, again, heavily biased, right? Yeah. Like, heavily biased. Polytechnic education, I believe, plays a critical role in our global economy. We address skill shortages, we're driving innovation, and again, I think we're bridging that gap between education and industry. So unlike traditional universities, we do focus on that hands-on applied learning, and we're preparing graduates to be job ready from day one. And I'll also preface that with saying, and I know that universities also prepare students to be ready as well in many programs also. So I'm not casting stones. Our contribution, NAIT's contribution, I think is really impactful because of our strong industry partnerships. We have very strong connection with industry, work integrated learning across all of our programming, and our focus on emerging technologies. So, you know, doing things like making sure we're aware of what's happening today so that our graduates are utilizing the tools that are coming out immediately. We have programs in fields like advanced manufacturing, energy, skilled trades, and even AI is being integrated across the board. And our students are gaining those real world skills that directly translates into economic growth. So from a Northern Alberta perspective, I think we're driving regional economic development. We are listening very closely to what the government's needs are. We're very closely related, very closely connected to understanding where the skills gaps are and focusing our education to address those gaps. Again, the province is heavily reliant on energy, and that's been front and center in the news lately. Yep. We'll get that east to west connection going again, and that'll, you know, just grow more and more. We've got major projects happening within the province that we need skilled workers for. And polytechnics and like Nate are really, I think, front and center for providing those skilled trades to meet the growth demands.
Yeah. No, Jody, thank you for sharing that. And I think Dirk and I, as fellow Canadians watching the same news cycles, we really do appreciate the realities yeah. of the industry and, of course, the province right now and where that fits in our national landscape. So there's a lot going on for you there, we're sure. But Dirk, I noticed here that you had a question that you would like to ask. So, Dirk, I'll hand it over to you just for a minute, and you'll make sure to hand it back. But, Dirk, I'll let you take the chair here for a moment now if you have thoughts, and then, of course, the question you told me you wanted to ask.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Christian. So, Andrew, this is, we alluded to this a little bit earlier, but I sometimes do work with security professionals, even safety professionals, and I do executive education. And my favorite slide that I start with is safety or security is always excessive until it's not enough. And so when I put that slide up, this is, you know, you want to relate to your audience. You want to say, I feel your pain. And, you know, when I have that slide, I have people saying, yeah, exactly. Welcome to my world, right? There's often this hindsight assessment mm-hmm. of what we should have done. But if I don't want to do it proactively, you know, people are saying, well, why are you doing this? And so, I mean, this is where we started a little bit, that often the safety push comes from because something happened. I love the near miss or the minor accident because it gets people's attention, but it's not a catastrophe. It's sad that it is like this, but that's often, in my experience, what happens. And so I'm always looking, you know, I'm in the business of influencing and convincing people of things. So that's fantastic to have you here. What's your idea to convince senior leaders that safety is, in fact, super important? We're not just saying it. We actually, as you're saying, it's part of the culture. It's part of what we believe. And yes, it is a small perceived inconvenience, but it will pay huge dividends. What's the secret to getting that across without having to go through the pain of an accident?
I'm going to come back to something that I said earlier. And for me, it's about influence, not power. And it's about motivating. And so, you know, when I think back to my most difficult situations and conversations with senior leaders, it was often there. So what's motivating them is ensuring that the company looks good, right? So we don't want to be on the front page. So we need to meet our customers' demands. And we need to make sure that we're not disrupting things for our customers. So we're going to, you know, continue to go down that path in a way that we're committed to. And any disruption to that is seen as a barrier. What has worked well for me in my experience is to put that into a personal perspective. So, for example, we're going to disrupt service. There is a likelihood that we won't be able to open our doors on Monday, back to school, September 1. We may not be able to open the doors on Monday. And you can imagine that leader was saying, no, like the doors will open on Monday. We have a commitment to, we have hundreds of students coming on Monday, thousands of students coming on Monday. We will open. In that individual circumstance, I framed it as, please picture your children walking through that door. Mm-hmm. And so I think it comes back to that personal connection, right? Knowing what motivates your individuals. And I don't mean that from, you know, the money aspect. I think you really need to connect, know people's names, know their children's names, understand what activities they like to partake in on the weekend, and place these things into their context. Case studies are great. We can talk about, you know, minor safety lapses leading to major financial reputational damage, all of those things. You can say the picture this on the newspaper front page. But if you bring it down to the personal thing, That's when you connect with individuals, and that's when you get that true connection to the return on investment, because it's not just about dollars and cents. It's a personal return on investment.
Yeah. So Jody, if I just comment on that, that's interesting, because I make it drawing a parallel here. And this, some years ago, was in a meeting with a big name charity fundraising consultancy in Boston. And there was a question on, hey, how do we raise funds? And the president of the charity assumed if we have good explanation, almost like an annual report where we show donor impact on all of this, and this will really be good. We show where we spend our money. And they said, no, where you raise funds is what they call the grateful beneficiary. This is why the universities are successful. The hospitals are so successful, because if I have a major illness, or a loved one has a major illness, and they have surgery and it's successful, now I get the fundraising letter. It's very different. If I got my degree there and they send me that's a very different impact. Even though you can show me a much better ROI maybe with what you do, I'm not connecting to it. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that was a real eye opener. And so you do bring it back to people. And it's amazing to me, again, how often it actually does go back to people in circumstances where we think it's about the charts and the graphs and the percentages. And it's a very perceived, felt, emotional attachment to something. So yeah, excellent. Thank you. But with that, Christian, the questions go back to you.
Thank you, Dirk. Thank you for relinquishing that. That is most appreciated. And that was a great conversation, a great question there. And Jody, thank you for answering it. We all appreciate it. But our time is coming to an end here, and I have a couple more questions to ask. And first of all, we have our favorite question on the Jemar Leadership Podcast, where we love to get practical and we love to think of people who are aspiring leaders. And in this case, we could think of perhaps students or early career leaders seeking advice on where to go and what to do. So Jody, I'll just ask broadly, based on your experience and perhaps your specific vantage point, and given everything we discussed today, what skills do you believe are most critical for future leaders? And of course, we're thinking about those perhaps who are in polytechnic education, but we can go beyond that in any way that you think people could have some advice to get ahead or move ahead in a way that's wise. So anything you have to share, please.
For me, the most critical thing is resilience and adaptability. We are living in a state of constant change. The pace is accelerating. Leaders need to be able to pivot quickly. I hate that word pivot, but anyways, pivot quickly without losing sight of the long-term goal, right? We have to be able to stay connected to what's happening. Even at times, you know, there's so many things going on in the world right now that it's very easy to get drawn down into that and have that impact, you know, your psyche in a negative way. I think that resiliency and adaptability is critical. I think, you know, I feel like it goes without saying that you need to be technically proficient, but you need to be technically proficient in more than one thing nowadays. And so, you know, understanding and, you know, like that cognitive offload, like what can make me better faster, I think is really important, regardless of what industry that people are working within. Across the world as well, I think what I would like to see as a critical skill in our leaders is ethical decision making. I think we need to lean deeply into making good decisions, sound, ethically sound decisions as we move forward. And, you know, you consider sustainability, you consider data privacy, you consider corporate responsibility, all of these things will touch all of us in our decision making. So I think having that understanding of what your organization is connected to values wise as well is a critical skill for leaders. And I'll come back again to influence. Like, it's not about power. It's about communicating and influencing human beings. At the end of the day, the best system is fantastic. But if the people don't buy into the system, it is not going to work.
Mm.
Yeah. So culture eats.
Strategy for breakfast.
There you go.
We're blind for a second. Culture eats strategy for breakfast. Exactly. So what does that mean? You have to be authentic. Yes, you have to show up as yourself and connect with human beings, regardless of, you know, what your personal or professional agendas are. You have to be able to connect and come together and talk it through.
Yeah. Jody, that is fantastic. And I really appreciate the diversity of issues there, but they really speak to holistically who we are as people and aspiring leaders, where being technically proficient, but also being aware of ethical issues and how to respond to them. They might seem like they're heading two different directions in terms of topics, but when it comes to leadership, they're right there side by side, and both of them shape how you relate to people. And Jody, I think what I wrote it down right away, but what can make me better faster? I think that's a question no matter what someone is aspiring to do. Asking a question like that is critical, it's fundamental, and it relates to so many of the things we talked about, from technology, but I also think to safety and everything in between, where that question could be a simple thing, but it could also be something that shapes your leadership philosophy and approach, and of course, in conversation with the people you're working with around you. That is a lot to think about, and certainly practical in many different ways. As I said, though, I have one more question. We want to respect your time, but Dirk, before I get there, any thoughts or any input at this point?
On this one, I have to say, I agree with what's been said, and I have no sense to add on this one.
All right. Wow. So I won't question that. We'll take that. So we'll move forward. Jody, we wanted to ask, we normally ask this at the beginning, but we thought we would close with it. And it came up over the course of our conversation. But as we mentioned to you, and as our audience, of course, knows, we have an international audience. And we've alluded to over the course of the conversation that Northern Alberta as a whole is a unique province in Canada. It occupies a unique geographic and cultural spot in our country, and I believe around the world. So maybe you could just share with our audience outside of Canada, where does Alberta fit in Canada? Where does it fit in, I guess, everything we've talked about over the course of this conversation? What would you say Alberta has to offer us in Canada and across the world?
Yeah, I think, you know, Alberta is, well, for those, actually, I think a lot of people don't even know on a map where Alberta is. So I might just start there.
Yeah.
So we're above Montana. We're in between British Columbia and Saskatchewan. So we are a prairie province, which has everything from flat prairies to beautiful mountains. And most of our population is centered in the southern region of the province. So many people don't know this, but Edmonton is the northernmost major city. So anyways, there's your geography lesson for the day. What do we bring to the table? I think Northern Alberta in, as a whole, we are a powerhouse for energy, obviously. We are also a powerhouse for innovation and cultural diversity. We have many different resource-driven industries and emerging technology sectors that are centered here. We have both traditional and renewable energy. We have a rapidly diversifying economy. We have lots of AI, automation, and agritech going on, and a growing multicultural connection to the world as well. I think that's what I would say about Alberta. And also, it's cold, but on a summer day, it's beautiful.
No, I'm sure, and I hope to make it out. I know Dirk has been, but thank you for sharing that, Jody. I think in Canada, in recent months, if not weeks, Canadians as a whole are coming to appreciate Alberta in a new light. And I think that, of course, internationally, that'll follow as well. That knowing where Alberta is and what Alberta is about is definitely not something people should neglect. So we appreciate you sharing those insights and those points. And I think that's a great way to conclude our conversation. But of course, Dirk, you passed last time, but I'll give you one last chance, Dirk. Anything you want to say in closing here?
Yeah, Christian, this will not happen very often, but I just didn't have, didn't want to add something where Jody had said it all. But yeah. Jody, Alberta is making more international headlines. Canada is making more international headlines. I was speaking to people from Europe this morning, and even here in Ontario, people know who Doug Ford is internationally. Before, you would have to explain. And they wouldn't have known, and I still explain it to people in the in the U.S. And my colleague in Washington said, no, we know who he is. He's on the news here every day. I said, wow. So it's amazing how our geopolitical context, let's just call it that, has brought attention to Canada internationally, has brought attention to different places. In Canada and Alberta does have a unique spot. But it was good to hear from you, Jay. I mean, you kind of know this, but to hear it from someone like you that it's more than oil, really, that's what we're saying. And it's a lot more than that. And people need to know that because it's sometimes a little bit reduced to that. So it's fantastic to have somebody on our show from Northern Alberta. That is what makes the podcast fun. That we do have people truly from all over Canada and all over the world, and so it was really fantastic to have you here today. So big thanks from me for sure.
Yeah, and I'll echo that, Jody. Thank you for your time today and sharing everything you shared. So much to think about, and I know our audience will find so many things practical to apply, and definitely we would love to continue these conversations, and we hope that people, if they have questions, they can send us an email, and we would love to continue these conversations. It was so valuable, but when it comes to topics like safety, education, how it relates to industry, this is just the beginning. We just scratched the surface, and Jody, there's so much more, and I think you showed us that it's worth getting into and worth thinking about. So truly, on behalf of Dirk and I, and of course our audience, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm honestly honored to have been invited and appreciated the conversation so much. It's an honor to be able to highlight the great things that Nate has going on as well. And I am always interested in a conversation about health and safety.
Good.
And once again, thank you to Jody for joining us on the Jemoir Leadership Podcast. Dirk and I ourselves were super honored to have Jody on. Great to talk about health and safety, education, academic leadership, the connections between industry and the academy, so much more, polytechnic education, lots to dig into here. And of course, big thank you to Jody for sharing her advice. What a great conversation. As always, if you had any thoughts or questions you want to share with the Jemoir Leadership Podcast in relation to anything we spoke about, ideas for the future, whatever it might be, down below in the description, find our email, find our website, get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. But that's all we have for today on the Jemoir Leadership Podcast. We hope that you enjoyed. We hope that if you did enjoy, you'll leave a like, leave a 5-star review, share it with a friend, get the word out there. But until next time, take care.